Hey there, this is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in, checking us out. Whether you're listening live or downloading or streaming, whatever you're doing, it's so cool to have these opportunities to make connections. And so I appreciate the amazing technology we have that allows me to do this from the comfort of my home without having to go out and drive somewhere for 45, 20, 80 hours and just connect with people all over the world. I happened to find Tracy Bray. She's in Kansas City, where I am, the Midwest. It was just one of those things where I had read a little bit and saw her name somewhere and thought, oh yeah, she's way far away. And then a friend said, hey, she's local. Call her. Oh, cool. Got it. Done. So what happened with that is found out that Tracy's like really close, and we've connected, had coffee, chatted. We talked with her before. You might have heard another interview, but I wanted to reconnect because there's stuff about this medium stuff. Tracy Bray's a medium that I think is really fascinating in terms of getting people in some way qualified, classified, quantified, validated, accredited. All right. And when you're talking with this kind of information, it is really, we're on the, I think, the cutting edge of being able to give it some kind of a scientific basis. And in other words, we're not there yet. We're still learning. We're figuring out ways, the right questions to ask, the right kind of, I guess, scientific environment that gives us a way to do that. Well, so that's what's going on. And Tracy has been accredited, validated, certified, quantified by... see, that's really technical. By a couple of organizations that have also looked into a few other people as well. So she's not their only one. They're not their only guinea pig, but she's part of the place called the Winbridge Institute and the Forever Family Foundation. And with that, I wanted to ask her this time, what is required when you're talking about what kinds of, and I know there's the guy at Arizona, Schwartz, who had the book, The Afterlife Experiments, I believe.
Right.
And he's done some research with mediums, but this is a little bit different, right?
Correct. The difference, part of the difference between what Gary Schwartz did with Veritas and what Dr. Julie Beischel does with Winbridge is the Winbridge studies are much more intensive and I think more tightly designed. There are 8 steps that potential research mediums go through. It takes about 8 months to jump through the steps in order to see if you're going to meet all the criteria in order to become a research medium, to be certified.
Okay, so can you walk us through those?
Certainly. The 8 steps, the first step is a written questionnaire that's quite thorough. If you put them all together, it's the beginning of a profile of who mediums are, just like a really thorough application for anything. The second step is our personality and psychological tests. And the third step, the third and fourth step are phone interviews. And the first is with an existing research medium. And the second is with one of the investigators. And generally, that's with Julie Beischel. So those are the first 4. And if you make it through those, then the last ones get into actual testing of your abilities. And the 5th step is our 2 blinded phone readings. And by blinding, that means that the researcher is completely blinded. The researcher, Julie, does not know who we're looking for in the reading. And okay. In those readings, you're asked 5 different questions about who you're trying to attempt to get to, including tell me about the person, what were their interests and or career, what did they die from, and the final one is do they have any messages for the living. Those are scored by the actual person who Julie has no idea of who that person is.
Okay.
And then, go ahead.
Do you get to see the results after this is all said and done?
Specifically, no. But at the of the interviews, we're told, did we succeed to their criteria or did we not? But specifically do I ever talk to those people? No. Do I know specifically what hit and what didn't? No.
Okay. Okay. I guess that's to keep it totally and completely above board.
Right. And then the last steps, there's training involved. And one is about mediumship research. Another is about human research subjects training, which is a piece of training that anybody doing any type of research, regardless if it's about mediums or if it's about rhinoceroses, everybody needs to take that training. And then some specific grief training. You're required to read and report back on a couple of books. And so it's much more thorough than any training and any introductory work that I'm aware of with any research.
How many people are represented at this point by the Winbridge Institute?
Only 20. There were over 1,000 applications, and they selected 20. And right now, that will be all they select. It's closed to any new
medium. They've got their hands full.
Exactly. Their hands full and less money to do the work. They need donations. Very, very much. I encourage people to go to their website, winbridge.org.
Okay. So once you get past all of that, and that means you are certified and you're legit.
Correct. By the legit part, it means that you're able at a certain predetermined rate of accuracy to provide information that was unknown to you and unknown to the researcher, but that has meaning to the sitter, that's mm-hmm. the person that's being read, that we're reading for. And they are who score our accuracy, not Winbridge.
Okay, now my question is, sometimes when you get information, there may be a piece of the puzzle that isn't at the time immediately apparent. How quickly does this applicant, querent, client respond to whether or not you hit? Is it like an immediate, oh yes, this is on or this is off? I just from personal experience, sometimes it takes a day or two and you go, oh my gosh, that was what that was related to. And for some reason, the client blocked it.
If I recall, this is immediate in this portion of work with Winbridge. And you're absolutely correct on that. And also, the sitters are not, quote, professional sitters. So they're plucked at random. They may be people that have never had readings before. And I don't know if you would, I'd hope you'd comment on this, Wendy, that from the first time you ever experienced a reading to the umpteenth time you experienced a reading or saw one, your understanding as a sitter, as a client, progresses. And I think most people that have been through the process a few times would agree they have an understanding of the process. They realize they need to search deeply for what's coming through. It may not be obvious. So sometimes the sitters in this circumstance may not score
a hit.
Readers is hot. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And okay, I can address it in my own experience. I had a lady I was reading for in a small group, like 12 or so people. And this is when I was first going out and a little bit intimidated and insecure. Mm-hmm. But my guides kept saying, pursue this. And I'm like,
yes.
And so I kept asking if a name made sense. And the name to the person, she just absolutely was adamant. And so the third time I'm going down for the count saying, oh, because I know people who are watching, the observers, the people in the room are thinking I'm totally off and I should just be quiet and walk away. But I had the information from the guides. It said, just ask. And so finally, the third or fourth, it was traumatic enough, I blocked
uh-huh.
the sequence. But she finally said that was her given name. That's the name her family called her.
Oh.
But this is the name that we use. And so
yes.
She was so angry and had such a hostile connection with the woman's given name that
yes.
she wasn't going to acknowledge it. And there's no way in this lifetime I would have come up with such an unusual name out of the blue, because usually I don't go with names. I stay away from names. And that's to allow it to be, not to identify people too much who don't want to have any kind of stigma. You know, there are people who are still very insecure about getting a reading, period. And you divulge too much information and then they're embarrassed or humiliated, or as it were, you know, you've given away a secret that was sacred or personal. So there's another way of doing that. But I tell you, that wouldn't have scored for anybody a hit if I had walked away. And you have to really let go of your ego and say, I will be wrong, but I will do the best of my ability to get the information that it is supposed to be given at the time and walk away from it. And so that's what you're supposed to do.
And I can speak to that in one of these interviews that I did, or one of these readings that I did. I don't recall readings often, but in this one I do recall distinctly, and I do names. Five names came up. All five of which during the reading, and the sitter was, there is one reading you do where the sitter is present, where they're on the other side of the phone, but they're not commenting until the end. And at the end, all five names were names she acknowledged of deceased people, and immediate family. But in the scoring, she did not score any one of those as a hit. And thank God we had it as a taped, the readings are taped, of course. So.
Okay, good.
Accuracy is relative.
That is a whole other issue. We watched Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost over the last few days. And it's so funny because the relevance when she's doing the session, do you know, Marcy, and she's obviously fishing and obviously trying to get something. Finally, she goes for an ethnic name that may be appropriate for this person. Maria. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. You know, but like five or six names way off, from Doris to Andrea to Maria, you know, it's like, that's what it feels like when you're actually on. If you know this name, you have a name, it doesn't vacillate. It doesn't go from George to Fernando. It's there, and you're trying to figure out, why am I getting this name? What is this? And you have to stick with it, because when you doubt, you lose.
Yeah, exactly. That is very well put.
Okay, so now back to you. You have had some readings, and you talk, you know, this is the part where when as a medium, you're first going out and saying, I can do this and I want to do it in a public way. You put yourself out there. And again, you're going into a place where it isn't your comfort zone, because you're working with playing a game of charades here. What was it? You talked about one where there was this wonderful little guy who kept being the voice of dissonance. Is the best way I can put it. He was quacking like a duck.
Ah, yes. That's a fairly recent one. I had a group reading, and not everybody in the group knew each other. There were two women that did come together, and I was reading for one of them, and in the reading, her mother was coming through, and we were just chatting with the mother, and all of a sudden, there is a duck. It's white, like the Affleck duck, or a white goose, a white duck. And all it is doing is going quack, 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 quack. It does not shut up. It's an incessantly quacking duck. And I sat there for a moment, and that's one of those self-doubt moments, like, well, what am I supposed to do with a quacking duck? And I've learned enough by this point to just say, you know, there's a duck here quacking. I don't know why. Does that have meaning to you? And the woman I was reading for looked down like she was embarrassed. I looked at the person she came with, looked down. They looked at each other, looked down again, and I thought, I just said, okay, out with it. What's the duck? What's the duck about? The woman that I was reading for said that her husband had driven them to the reading, and that all he had uttered, he wouldn't shut up, was, quack, 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 insinuating that they were going to see a quack.
Now, ooh, the nerve.
My moral of this story is And she added, and I was so angry with him because I thought he would get in the way of the reading. And I said, well, let this be testament that he doesn't have that power. And also let it be testament that I don't have the power to bring in someone independently, because there's no way I could have known this, and I really wouldn't have wanted to say something like that. You have to have lots of confidence and a hard skin
armor
and work to let it roll off the duck's back.
Well, and part of it is when we do it, we realize and you kind of distance yourself from it. It isn't about us. It isn't about a personal thing. It's about being a conduit, being an interpreter or some kind of a messenger. And you have to let go of the ego, because it can be really frustrating when you have somebody who's right there and you give them five names that apply to their family and they acknowledge none.
Yeah.
And for all the viewers, all the bystanders, all of the crowd, the arena, the chorus going, you're wrong. And you're going, I don't care. This is what I get. I got to go with it. And you have to be so solid in that, that you're just outside of that arena, pretty much. You know, you're doing what you can, because the minute you let go of that thread, then you get derailed, the medium, the person who's doing the work. And so there's a way of learning how to step outside that. Again, Tracy Bray is a medium. And when she started doing this professionally, it was from our conversations, also a challenge, because how do you do this full time? This isn't something, I mean, again, you're going against the grain, against all of the convention of, here's a medium. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes your family, my family did not embrace this decision at all. And by family, I'm talking about siblings and parents. Both parents were alive when I started. And that has been hard. There have been friends that went by the wayside because they just thought I'd gone over the edge or was nuts. So it comes with a price. Nonetheless, the win in it is the honor of being able to do this work. And another thing that's really hard for me to understand and step away from is that when people do come through and they are acknowledged by the client, the sitter, but it's followed up with, I don't want to hear from them. That's not who I called to hear from.
Yeah.
I'm just, if you could see me right now, I'm slamming my palms against my forehead. And sometimes it's hard for me. I had one recently where I had trouble not crying because the person coming through was a decorated current war veteran who had died in a helicopter crash while fighting. Mm-hmm. And I clutch my chest with my hands as I say this. It's like, excuse me, as an American and a patriotic person, this person will be heard.
Yeah.
He came through and he's going to be heard. I don't control who comes through, certainly, because they didn't want to hear about it. I didn't know it, this person, but dang it, they came through.
Part of that, too, is that there's somebody, when that happens, somebody actually has a better or more powerful or more pertinent message that needs to be addressed. And it doesn't always happen that the person who's inquiring wants to do that in the moment. But boy, when they show up, there's a reason. There are no accidents. There's this greater thing going on, and we get caught up in the mundane of, well, is it going to be a better job, a better relationship? And I wanted to hear from my long lost companion because they were the most important person who ever walked. And the one who shows up is the one who's requiring you to do a little bit more work so you can get there.
Right. Exactly.
Otherwise you won't.
Yeah. But it's a real, there are so many more components to the work itself when working with a client than just sitting there and getting the messages.
What do you do about the backlash? I mean, sometimes these can be, when you're talking about that draining, that emotional thing, you can walk away emotionally, physically, just everything, exhausted. And how do you regenerate?
I try to live a balanced life is how I regenerate. I have animals at home. I love decorating and my home, so that takes up part of my interest. I read a lot, just enjoyable stuff for me. I love the sunshine. My true regeneration is the beach. I live in Kansas City, Missouri, and have this beautiful summer porch that looks out over some vacant buildings, and sometimes I'll just envision that it's the beach. So it's through my own imagery and fantasization and things. I just try to enjoy my time. I have a rich network of friends. So just a normal life.
I was picturing that, you know, all the earth shift changes they keep prognosticating and thinking, well, you know, babe, you might be onto something, so quit it. Don't put the beach here, just, you know, you say, wait a minute. Or either that or buy your property and don't, you know, make sure that, okay, here it is. Future site of Tracy's Beach. Yeah.
Yes. We can just dig a big pond over there. It'll happen.
Okay. So the other thing too, though, that I really, this is, do you talk with people who may have had a name, you know, some public persona? Can you do that kind of connecting, or have you?
Give me an example of what you mean. Like if Princess Diana wanted to come through.
Okay. I'll give you an example.
Okay, great.
Well, then this is because this is the time of year. Okay. I never really was as impressed or caught up in the Perseid meteor showers until after John Denver died. Now, as a kid, I watched John Denver. I was mesmerized. I loved his music. Got to interview him before he passed. Everything was this wonderful envision of this creative person that I had. Now, the time that I interviewed him, I was doing talk radio. He had just had his most recent DUI, and he was kind of guarded. When we went on the air, I had a chance to kind of I told him that there was a song that I liked called Grandma's Featherbed, and it's just a, you know, it's a funky, hokey song, but it was something that touched a personal note with him, and the interview from then on was great. He invited me to the concert. I said no, because I wanted to keep my illusion of him. I didn't want to meet the person. I wanted the person that I still cherish. Mm-hmm. And when he, a year after he had died, I got this connection, and it was, you know, said John Denver. Oh, I'm like, yeah, right. John Denver, you know, okay. He said, go see the Perseids, go out and watch. That's my favorite time of year. And it happened to be July or August. I keep a diary. I wrote it down. Uh-huh. But I don't remember the other things I got from him. But most of it was that still that same soul, that same pattern of energy that really enjoyed a whole lot being human and life, but having a bigger picture and a grander panoramic view of not just this physical, but the spirit aspect of it and what he learned. And so it was that connection that now, going out this past 2 or 3 days, we went to a spot where it was dark and you could see in the last 2 or 3 nights watching the showers and being connected. It was that after thing with him that then I looked it up and found out, yeah, that was one of his favorite times of the year. That was something that was important to him, but I wouldn't have known that unless I'd had this little tweak, this little connect, from somebody that we knew as John Denver. And so then I went back and listened to more of his music and more of his beliefs and, you know, the humanitarian stuff that he did and, you know, how he tapped into his creativity. So that is my example of somebody that I would have not attempted to, that just kind of came in.
Yeah, I have isolated moments of that. And I mentioned Princess Diana. And she is one that rarely... I must backtrack. It's not often during my waking hours when I'm not doing the work that I, quote, tune in, or that people, souls independently pop through. She has to me a couple of, well, probably 3 times.
And, okay, wait, because we've only got a minute here. And okay. So this is going to take a little longer.
Okay. Actually, her messages are very brief, and they pertain to what I'm doing at the time.
Okay, well, that's worth, you know, 3 times is, you know, that's a trend. That's not just a, you know, a blip on the screen. So that's why I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Again, we're talking with Tracy Bray. And if you would like to get in contact with her, you can check her out on Facebook. You can also go to her website, which is TracyBray, BRAY.com, and get a phone number, make a connection, find out about the Winbridge organization and how, you know, if you have your own aspirations or your own sense of being connected in a mediumistic way, you can do some research on that. In the meantime, though, we'll take a break, and I want to hear the three. You don't have to limit it. If there's more, yeah. But the three times or the three pieces of information from Princess Di. Okay, how's that?
Okay.
When we come back.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha-ha! I win! Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hello there, Conscious Living on Empower Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. My guest today, Tracy Bray, is a medium, and she's really, really dynamic with groups and people. And if you are interested in booking a session, you can get on our website and check it out. Also, Facebook, one way or the other. You do free readings on Sundays. Is that how that works?
I have been, yes, where people submit a question and I choose one of the ones I've received and respond to it on Facebook.
Okay, so there you go. Now we go back to Di, Princess Di. Mm-hmm. Three times you've made a connection.
Right. My sense is she's reached out to me, and two times, these are very quick to tell, were in support of a charitable contribution I had made or something that I had just done that was a kindness. And as we all know, she's somebody that was a huge part of her life, was being philanthropic and a supporter of many charities. And although I would not consider myself economically, certainly, or time and investment to any degree that she is, it was just that she popped in and bowed her head at me as in thank you and just said thank you. Now, the other time was when I was frustrated with my work with reading for some of the things we've talked about previously in the show. People not acknowledging or not wanting to hear from people that come through. And I was frustrated with that. I did not reach out to her, nor was I asking for help from anybody, just thinking, pondering about what had happened. And all of a sudden, there she was in my mind's eye and saying, your work is valuable. Your work is valuable. Thank you. And there she was gone. So her visits were very quick, but nonetheless, she was there and impactful at the time.
Well, see, that's what I think is fascinating, that when we get, you know, this connection with somebody who maybe was larger than life and left that kind of imprint on us, then it resonates for us in a way that says, it may not be about the person, but about what they represent. It's a bigger thing. It's not about all the personality quirks and all the, you know, who was married to who. It's about what they left as a legacy or some kind of an imprint where we can pick up, you know, pick it up and carry it forward. Mm-hmm. And I think both of those people, like John Denver with his conservation efforts and his incredible connection with nature, for me, is an inspiration in that respect. And for you, that philanthropic focus with Princess Di is a larger than life thing. Another one that I had it was so funny. I keep saying that whenever somebody dies, that's when I get to meet them. It happened with when I was doing news. I did an obit for one of the blues guys who died, and I remembered the little clip from him at the time was loneliness, about how that was one of the worst things to get through. And I had dreamed that morning about these two women doing dishes in the kitchen and coming out. And there was this big easy chair that was in a room with a huge CD entertainment system. And it was empty. And at times I remember it empty. At times I remember somebody sitting in the chair. But that morning, here was this obit. And it was like, I had to go buy his music and find his stuff and make a connection, because he had such powerful wisdom in his life and his words and his message. John Lee Hooker. And The Healer was the last CD he came, or piece that he came out with. And so I watched the transformation he made through his life. And that end note, it was like, here it was. Oh, wow. Him and Israel, and I will never do his last name, Kamawawio, and I always mess it, train wreck at the end. But I just call him Iz, and that makes it all work. But I got a visualization of a hook, of this hook, and then this hand reaching down from a cloud. And that was when I made the connection, and I saw one of his CD covers, and there's this on the necklace, this little picture of a hook, and I'm like, aha. But those kinds of things that come in, and I think that's part of our quantum stream that we're all connected to.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think those things happen to other people that maybe don't live in the world you do or I do, that just immediately shut them down. But I believe there are those celebrated individuals that pop into everybody's life every now and then.
Well, and you do some reading, you find out that's just a curiosity, and people think, well, you know, this is just an anomaly, when I really think it's a much more common thread, as you're saying, that we really are beginning to get a bigger picture and a greater awareness about as people share their stories.
Yeah, I do as well.
As that. Now, how long, when you became a medium, what were you doing before?
I have a master's in law enforcement, and the last couple, there were some things I was doing profession-wise at the time that this really started to emerge, and I was working as a parole officer with a caseload of violent offenders and some sexual offenders. So that was what I was doing when this started to emerge as other work for me.
Talk about a break from reality, almost like a wow.
It was. And what was really hard also was those two worlds traditionally don't mix. And a lot of the work that I was doing as a psychic and as a medium was really under the table, because I was concerned at the time. I never saw this in the beginning as something that would become my life, my career, my work. And I loved the other work, the criminal justice stuff. But I was not out about it at that time.
Okay, well, this is kind of like the parallel with Alison Dubois and her story that went into be Medium, you know, working, paralleling the case, the some of the things that were happening, in, you know, in regard to homicides and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My question would be, did it give you nightmares? Did you make the kinds of connections that put you in closer contact with some of the people that you were working with?
Yes and no. And those connections have been there from the beginning with law enforcement. I can think of one of the first things, which I don't want to go into in detail, and it's very lengthy, that came up in dreams, actually, for me, that was horrifying, and it predicted something that happened 7 years later. At the time that I was getting it, I shared it with someone in law enforcement who later was who handled it. And it turned out to be quite fascinating and very affirming for me, post facto. But it never, that is somebody who said to me at the time, you know, what am I supposed to do with it? And I was kind of like back at him parroting, well, what am I supposed to do about it? also, as is most of the time when I deal with law enforcement, it's with not the chief, not the commander. It's always underlings, detectives, investigators, et cetera, who will often say, if my chief, if my sheriff, if my commander knew, sorry, I've got an incoming call, I didn't shut that off. If they knew that I was doing this, I would lose my job.
Yeah.
So I've always been under the wire with that and don't talk about the law enforcement stuff in specifics. But it was interesting how those were some of the big things that came in initially.
Well, and my thought would be just to kind of affirm and give you a jump start and say, honey, you're going to get this whether you want it or not.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is true. Now, there were some things that I got that were so disturbing to me and unsolicited by me or anybody else. They were just there in the beginning. I think at the beginning I got slammed with information. I think there was a reason for that, to say not only you're going to get it, but here it is. Mm-hmm. And it came in a huge quantity, I think, to get my attention, and it did. And I was able with some of it to say through my thought, my prayer, if you want me to have this information, give it to me in detail where I can do something about it, or leave me alone.
Yeah.
Now, that is, in fact, what has happened. Immediately thereafter, I got what I asked for, and I don't get it as often, but when I get it, it's pretty powerful, and often I can do something with it.
Well, part of it, that's boundaries. It's giving it a way of coming to you without, for one thing, debilitating you. There's some of this stuff when you get involved with people who have real nefarious and negative and earthbound, not just in their physical, but in their mind. They carry this stuff around them in a cloud, and it's very real on some levels. And so then you get some of that psychic baggage, and it can be intensely not just aggravating, but it can take you off track.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It can be an extremely sad, horrifying, just all kinds of emotions can come with it. I think in having done it for decades now, I'm able, for the most part, to stand back from it and just look at it as if I'm reading, as in reading a book, reading something, picking up the information, and then, rather than taking a test about it, deciding whether or not I need to make a contact about it, and then doing so, or just putting it away.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you get information, it isn't always that you're supposed to give it to somebody else, because there are some people, they view it as, well, I have the information, I'm going to give it. And it's like, wait a second.
Yeah.
There's a higher authority that says, is the other person or wherever this is going, is that the source or the resource or the proper road to take. Just because you get something and it makes you really big and almighty powerful Oz doesn't mean you have to go out and prove it to everybody. Sometimes it means you need to shut up until it's supposed to be given, and maybe it's supposed to come through another route. Okay, that's my take on it.
I say amen to that. And I have seen some investigations, mainly local state and county, where people, and I don't think it's unusual when there's a horrific crime that is publicized, for a number of people, some of whom have never had any, quote, psychic experience or medium experience, to have a dream about whatever happened.
Yeah.
But I have seen some people then take that and run to law enforcement and run to the family and say, I saw this. And sometimes families, and rarely, but at times law enforcement, will grab onto that and go with it. And it's horribly wrong. And it causes for psychics and mediums that are accurate to never be contacted.
Yeah,
it's like one bad experience is going to be all of the rest of the experiences we ever have. Therefore, we're not going to go out on a limb and try this again. And every time there's a celebrated case locally in the Kansas City area, for example, concerning a missing child, I have a minimum of 5 phone calls from people who have had that dream, had that vision, et cetera. What do I do with it?
I think that's the most awful, helpless, gut-wrenching position to be in when you have a piece of the puzzle and there's nowhere to go.
Yeah. Oh, and I hear you there, because sometimes I feel like I don't get these things very often anymore with loose information. And the ones that I deal with tend to be on a terroristic field. Mm-hmm. Versus local issues. And not that those aren't every bit as important, but those don't tend to be what I get. But it is frustrating when you don't know where to go or what to do. And I think my background in criminal justice allowed me to come into this work with just a wonderful Rolodex, if you will, of live contacts in a variety of agencies, federal, state, local.
Well, and a context, a way of, okay, this is the appropriate channel. I need to wait here. I can't just dive in. Let's see what transpires. And then is there going to be a receptive environment? And then who's my ally? And who do I need to just kind of go around?
Right. Exactly.
The other thing, go ahead.
I was going to say too, people ask me, often when this topic comes up, well, did you get anything on this case or on that case? And my typical answer is no. I don't find it my job or my reason for being on Earth to look into everything that happens. I would go over the edge if I did that.
So some of it, you just have to put up the barriers and say, not today.
Exactly.
Or not that direction. Not that direction. Because that's one thing I have steered clear of, because there's so much flotsam and jetsam when you're dealing with people who have these character issues and are incredibly determined to do negative things, and they bring it all with them, and they everything they touch has that element. And when you see that, and when you experience that as an intuitive, an empath, whatever you want to call it, then you can consciously shift your life in a different direction and say, I can't fix, but I can give other people the power to enable themselves to contact and connect with their own intuition, their own senses. And for me, when you get that little piece of the puzzle and your clue is it was a hit, you had it, that's your indication that you also have these abilities. But if you want to do anything with it, then you better start doing your homework and figuring out how they work for you. Because no matter how many wonderful, fabulous, incredible, legit books there are about how to do it, each person has his own perfect way. And that is worth exploring for yourself. That way nobody else can derail you. Because once you do it your way, somebody else can't come in and say, well, you didn't follow the procedure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's right. I didn't.
Well, and when I started this work too, well-meaning other psychics that I worked alongside at psychic fairs would make comments like that even. You need to do it this way. You aren't doing that. I've never been a person who meditates. But now that I've done this work for a long time, I think when I'm reading, I'm meditating to a certain degree. You know, had I gotten all wound up in whatever people said that I should be doing, how I should be doing it, I never would have found my own way.
Yeah, I think that, you know, is a wonderful piece there of the puzzle that when you go out in the community of authorities and the educated of a certain way, you're going to have to be able to, again, say, I appreciate what you're doing, and this is how I see it, or this is how I am.
Yeah.
Because there are so many well-meaning people, including family, who say this isn't in your best interest because you can't earn a living. And if you do earn a living by doing it like that, you're just a charlatan because that is not legit. So people are paying you good money and you're doing a disservice is what that implies.
Yes.
And so it's a tough thing to go public and to be somebody who wears that title full time, because you have to take into account at this moment, it isn't a popular thing, but at this moment, it's incredibly helpful because it's helping us connect dots we didn't know existed 40 or 50 years ago.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't talked about.
Right. And, you know, I should say, to reflect back on some of the comments I made about people not wanting to be in contact with people that come through or not wanting to acknowledge them, I never know what happens after we get off the phone and how they may deal with it and process it then. I have to trust that everything comes out as it should, and it may. I just don't always have that window.
Well, you know, what I think is interesting is, you know, the loudest thing you put out, don't, go away, yeah. Well, that says that's an issue.
Yeah.
Okay, so as soon as you get really loud about absolutely no way, at least, you know, if I ever say never, then it comes to meet me at the door.
Yes.
When I say, maybe not, you know, okay, I'm fine. It'll be fine. You know, whatever for the greatest good is supposed to happen, then I will deal with it. But as soon as I put out a big, huge brick wall, there's a fist that comes through it and says, surprise, guess what? That's the invitation. So that's why Uncle Joe shows up when you thought you were done with him. He died. He's gone. You know, see you, Joe. Yeah. I hope you have a nice class, because you obviously need a few.
Yeah.
Oh, we're so judgmental. Joe was probably here just for our own sake, doing the best he possibly could to get us to get that brick helmet off. And then we go, he failed. In the meantime, he changed our entire perspective on living. And you either rise above it or you go down with the ship.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's no judgment when you get into the afterlife stuff. I think it's also funny when you deal with ghosts. Now, do you have any kind of energy that comes along with this? Like before you do a read or after, do you get any indication that somebody may be ringing your bell?
Occasionally before a reading, there are some families I've worked with over the years. And sometimes some of their people will start to pop through in between the time the appointment is made and the actual reading, and usually particularly the evening before. I generally try to just say, excuse me, I'm not open right now. So, and I'll love to talk to you tomorrow, but right now. And part of that is because, one, I don't want the interference personally, boundaries, and two, I'm afraid I won't remember. So
yeah.
I think it's better for all that we all wait until the prescribed time. Afterwards, not very often. Upon occasion, after the reading is done, the client is gone or we've hung up, I'll get some other messages. Sometimes I'll pass those forward. Sometimes they seem innocuous to me and I don't. But it's rare that, you know, 3 or 4 days after a reading that someone would pop through that has come up.
For me, it's beforehand. Like there was one who just kept, no, 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 no. I'm like, wait, 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 go, 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 go. Not yet. And cigarette smoke. was the clue. There was this nobody smoked around me and in the house or anything, but the cigarette smoke was signature. The other there was another one where the lights, the porch light, most often the porch light would blow out, and then I would get the phone call. Hey, can you help me? There were significant and consistent, like a preliminary thing that would happen to let me know, okay, this might be going, you know, this may be so-and-so checking in. Mm-hmm. But the cigarette smoke finally went away once I acknowledged and said, okay, I'll give him the message.
Uh-huh.
But it was just annoying, because that's when I started realizing that these things were also part of it. And it wasn't just an anomaly. It was a part of doing the reading, was your mm-hmm. reality was going to shift a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And to pay attention.
Right. Right.
When you had to tell your parents and your family, did they ever make peace with that?
I don't know if they have. I think today that they acknowledge it to me. They ask in generalities if I'm busy, things like that. But do we ever? I've had much more discussion about my work in this radio show than I've ever had with my immediate family at all.
Okay.
So there aren't the questions that you or others ask me. I've never been asked by my family.
Okay. There was one incident you told me about where something happened after you had talked with a person and they said, why didn't you tell me this was going to happen? Can you address that potential or that possibility when a psychic doesn't tell you something negative or something, either way, you know, positive?
Yes.
Why they don't tell you in advance?
I can. And the times when that has happened a few times in my personal life, when I look back, there have been things that I did do that may not even have been obvious to me to why I was doing them. For example, and I don't have an issue in using this example, my previous husband had a very severe accident at his work site where he fell 40 feet off of a radio tower he was working on. And he said to a cousin of mine, we've been divorced for well over 20 years now, and he said to a cousin of mine who told him, did you know she's psychic? She's a practicing psychic now. And he said, no, he didn't do that. I sure wish she would have said something to me and predicted my fall. Well, when I look back at that, when that happened, we were on vacation the weekend before with a family member in a faraway state. And his accident happened on the Monday following the weekend we were gone. I said to him when we were gone, let's not go back to work. We're having such a good time. Why don't we call in and take? We'd been on our jobs a long time, enough vacation time. Please, let's just, what do you say? Let's stay. Nope, got to get back, got to get back. I said, something says we really need to stay. Nope, got to get back. So when I look back on that day, I did try to do something.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know. I don't go looking for stuff that's negative, painful. But I'm very much not like Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium, which many clients that come to many psychics right now think that that's the type of reading they're going to get, which I could talk about that at more length. I know we don't have the time, but, I don't, in other words, with everything that crosses my mind, it does not come out of my mouth.
We'll reconnect. Don't worry about it. My answer for that, too, is there's some things that are not meant to be told. If you're here and you've got homework to do and you're supposed to have a challenge, you're going to get it. And if a psychic prevents it from happening one way by giving you a heads up, you're going to get it another way if you're supposed to go through it. So it's not a psychic's job to keep you from learning your lessons, however they may come into your life.
Right. And I also know with that accident happens for him, which, as I understand, he has recovered beautifully from. He's remarried, has a lovely family. Lots of great things have happened for him. Also, my life changed as a result and went in this path that I'm on.
So, see, there you go. Life keeps going. Tracy Bray. You can check her out at TracyBray.com. Thank you, Tracy. We'll reconnect. You had more stuff to talk about, and you know,
thank you.
Never a dull moment.
Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks for listening, Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett.